Good afternoon. Today is the 6th of March 2014 and I'm here to interview Miss Edith Forrester. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Claire.
Edith, could you begin by telling me when you were born?
Yes, I was born in Nordhausen am Harz in Germany.
And in what year was that?
1931.
And what was your name at birth?
Edith Tvelkemeyer.
Now, can you tell us a little about your family life before you came here?
Yes, I had been going to a school, a non-Jewish school, and I had a little girlfriend called Gretchen. We used to go to school together, and she, whenever she discovered I was Jewish, she stopped coming for me. So that was a heartbreak for me. But I had a wonderful teacher called Herr Krieghoff. And I can remember very vividly my mother saying that we were going away. And I thought, oh, good, a holiday. So we went shopping, I think, in Hamburg and visited friends. And then one day my mother took me up to school to see Herr Krieghoff. And she was telling him that I would be going away. But I didn't hear just that I was going myself. In my mind, we were going as a family. And to my amazement, I saw tears in Herr Krieghoff's eyes, and I'd never seen a teacher with tears in his eyes. And then he bent down and gave me a hug, and I was so overcome by this, and I thought, why did he do that, you know? So these moments have come back to me again and again, because I was happy at school and I played with other children. But I can remember when the name-calling started, because he started calling, Eudine, Eudine, when they discovered at school. And, of course, I asked what that meant, you know, and so on. And my mother just said, oh, don't worry about that, you know, that's not anything to hurt you or anything. But I also remember very clearly each morning at school we had to stand in lines in the playground, and of course the German flag was raised, and then at the end we had to say Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, and put your hand out. And I felt just cold shivers going down my spine, because, you know, I've had many Jewish friends that came to the house, and they were all so demonstrative and, you know, loving and everything. And I can remember my mother was making felt flowers, and she had a whole group of ladies who came to do this. But what I didn't know at the time was they were really learning English together. And in case the Gestapo came, they were making flowers. And when I arrived, I had one of these felt flowers in my coat. And yes, the Gestapo eventually came. And first of all, they went upstairs to the top flat, took away the Jewish owner, and he was never heard again. Off again. And then the next flat, it was Jews, all Jewish people, and they were taken away as well. And then they came to me, and I can remember it was night time, seemed to me in the middle of the night, but one of them was very rough, and my grandmother was in the next room. I had a bed with the maid, Annalisa, and pulled my grandmother out of bed, and she was actually, unknown to me at that time, dying of cancer. And she was standing in a white nightdress with her hands clasped and praying, you know. And that has never, ever left me, because I adored my grandmother. My father had his own business and my mother was in charge of the office. So it was really Annalisa, the maid, and my Omi, who were important to me. So whenever I came home from kindergarten in school, it was always Omi I ran to, Annalisa, and, you know, so...
And was that in 1938?
1938, yes, 1938 that was, yeah.
And did they take your grandmother away, or...?
No, they took my father away. But my father, being non-Jewish, he, of course, was able to come back 2 or 3 days later. And, you know, were relieved at that. But by this time, names were being sewn on things. My little name tags and everything on what I was going to take with me, and it was just preparing for a journey.
And were you aware that you were Jewish before any of this happened? No.
These were lovely Jewish people that came, and I loved them. But being Jewish was never something that was discussed. You know, you're a Jewish child and you must do this and you must do that. And at Christmas time, I went 1 year to my father's relatives in Gütersloh, and the next year I would go to Berlin to be with my Jewish Omi's sister and family. So it was the best of both worlds, but a child accepts these things very much more. And it's only now, when I think back, I think, how could I not have guessed that things were not the way it should have been, you know?
Your parents must have been good at protecting you.
Yes, very much so. And, you know, the agony of my father that seeing us off, you know, to the station that morning to get to the train, and it still didn't dawn on me Dad would be coming. Papa, and kommst du, yeah, so to speak. And später, yeah. And then, of course, we got to the railway station and all the SS were lined up and we were standing there with the parents, and then they told us to come forward. And my mother was allowed to come and help me up, and the steps in a German train are very high, and lifted me up, and then the door was closed. I could not believe that my mother was not with me. Couldn't believe it. And they were standing in the corridor. I mean, the train was packed full of only children. And then suddenly the train started. And I can remember screaming, Mutti, Mutti! And somebody lifted me up and pushed people aside so I could see out of a window. And my last memory of my mother was she was frantically looking to see if she could see me, and I saw her, but she never saw me these last minutes. But it was a terrible, painful thing, you know.
Do you know how they were able to get you onto the Kinder transport? Do you ever find out how they achieved that?
No idea at all, no. But God meant it, mm-hmm. And that is what it was.
And what happened to your mother afterwards? Did you find out?
Yes, she was taken to a munition factory, and my father had to divorce her. He didn't want to divorce her, but she said, it would be better for your safety, and I will go. So she agreed to that, and she didn't see him again. But it has been emphasised again and again by both sides of the family that my father wanted to stay with my mother, and she would not allow it. So our child was going to be safe. I think she had hoped she would get to Britain as a domestic, mm-hmm. because that was the only way they could get there to be in service, but she never made it. So that was it. In the records, it said that she died of pneumonia, but my cousin Kurt gave me that information. He can't do anything else now. He's really my mother's cousin, but he was 12 years younger than my mother, and he's about 12, 13 years older than me, and he lives continually now in the past, you know, and he filled me in with a lot of information. He saw my father when he went back as a GI. He escaped from, his parents died in Auschwitz, but his grandmother died in Theresienstadt, and he had a letter applying to get out to America. And he doubled the letter over, and they thought it meant he'd got permission to get out. And he said, raus. And he escaped. And he went to America, to New York, to our family doctor, Dr. Johnny Stern, who delivered both of us. And, you know, it was amazing. And from there, he settled and became an American citizen.
And your father, did he spend the rest of his life in Germany?
Yes, he did. Yes, yeah. So, yeah.
So how did you come to Scotland then? How did that happen?
Well, when we arrived, I'd never been on a boat before, but when we arrived, oh my, they took us to a great big hall in London. And would you believe it, they had white tablecloths, white. And they served us drinking chocolate and sandwiches and biscuits and cakes. And I was shaking so much that I spilt my cocoa, drinking chocolate, and it made a lovely brown river down this thing. And that was the first time I ever shed a tear from since I left Germany.
Was that because you were advised not to cry? Some people have told us that you were told it was dangerous, or Kinder were told it was dangerous to cry.
Dangerous to try what?
To cry.
To cry. No, nobody's ever said that to me. No. So then we all had labels, of course. So then after we'd eaten, they said, and we were in different groups.
So they're pointing to different areas.
That's right. And then they put us on a bus. And we sat up all night on this train, no idea where I was going. But then I had no idea on the first train where I was going, or the ship. And I had on the ship, I was with a girl much older than me. And she made me go up on the top, and she stayed, other way round. I was at the bottom and she was at the top.
On a bunk.
On a bunk each. And she was very, very sick during the night. So I had to look after her and she just had to stagger into my bunk. And, and I had to climb up on top of this one, but she kept being sick. So neither of us had much sleep. So that was a nightmare. And yes, that was coming over. And then when we were on the train, we were, of course, on our way to Scotland. Mm. And again, I had no idea what was happening. So when we got off, they took a photograph, which I think you've seen. Bob's on that photograph and his sister at the very end. And they just put us on a bus again. And they took us to an orphanage in Selkirk, which is now a hotel. I've been back there. I was invited as an honoured guest at their Ridings, the annual event, many years ago. And they took us there and it was at that time it was a dismal place, And we were in a long dormitory, one for the boys, one for the girls. And I was at the very end one. And because there were mice running around the floor, when somebody wanted to go to the toilet, they say, Edith, komm doch mit, komm doch mit. And of course, poor me, I had to get up and go to the toilet with them for company. Oh dear.
To scare off the mice.
I know.
Dear, that was terrible. Strange. Were there a lot of children there with you at the time?
Difficult to tell. Probably maybe about 30 of us. Difficult to just assess, really. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of older ones. Mm-hmm. There weren't so many. I was the youngest one, actually. Yeah. So, that was something. And we got porridge every morning and it was runny. Oh, no. So that was a nightmare too. Didn't like porridge.
I'm sure. And did you have any English? Had you learnt any
English? No, not a word. Can I ask us what? Nothing. And the funny thing is, whenever I think of anything, or if I'm caught in a traffic jam or anything, Helen always declares I speak in German. Du liebe Zeit, was sind das? Was ist los? Warum warten wir denn hier? Things like that. So crazy. No, I hadn't a word of English, not a word. And we were sitting one day, having a meal, actually. And they said, Edith. And I went. I was taken into one of the lounges. And a lady and gentleman got up. And she was dressed in powder blue dress and matching coat. Tweed, and he had +4s in chocolate brown, and he had very brown eyes, and they couldn't speak a word of German, I couldn't speak a word of English, but somehow I felt I could trust these people for the first time since I had left my home and parents. I could trust them. And We smiled at each other and there was nothing else, but all the paperwork was to be done then and they were going to come and collect me. Well, that wasn't discussed with me. But other ladies came as well, elderly ladies. Two elderly ladies came to interview me and look me over, and I didn't react one way or the other, not at all. So anyway, when it came to the bit, Mum and Dad came to collect me and they said, "I'm very sorry, she's been promised to the ladies' names." "Oh no. No, no," my father said, "that is not on, because we've signed all the papers and we are definitely getting Edith." Well, the matron said, "I'm so sorry, but you won't get her today. We'll have to look into this." And they did look into it. And in the end, of course, Dad being a very determined person and a legal person, he knew all the tricks of the trade. And so one day it was arranged that I would have my case packed and we got on the train. That was when there was still a connection between the borders and Edinburgh. And when we got to Edinburgh and got off the train, who were coming along the platform but Mum and Dad. And they took me on another train and we went to Sinclairtown, which is another district in Kirkcaldy. And the station is no longer there, and we got off there and long stairs up and just a short walk, and we came to the bank where Dad was in charge, a bank manager, and bank house on top, a brand new flat. And just as we went in, suddenly whoosh, and down the stairs came the most beautiful white and brown cocker spaniel, and that was my friend forever. Licked me all over, and we had been inseparable till he died. So he didn't die till he was 15. So I may be adding things that are irrelevant.
No, not at all. So that, I suppose that gave you a very good impression of Scotland when you first came.
Oh, yes, yes.
And what about going to school after that? You still only spoke German.
Yeah. Well, they put me in the infant class to learn English. And every morning the bell would go at certain time, I can't remember when, excuse me, and a group of pupils would be standing there. "We've come to take Edith to school." And I had this for weeks that they came to collect me. And of course, they gave me all kinds of IQ tests and various things. And I had a lot of help from the infant mistress and the teachers. And so gradually I got into my own age group. But every so often I had a request, would be somebody would come into the class and say, "Edith is to go to Miss O'Hinnichy." And I thought, no. This lady did IQ tests and she sat on a squeaky cushion, and every time you asked a question, she would lean forward, squeak! A question, squeak, and an answer. Oh dear. And it was all, you know, a man with a black bag goes up to the door. What's his job? And things like that. Yeah. So anyway.
Were the children all kind to you? Because the war was starting and they must have known you came from Germany.
The only time I ever had this was in Sunday school, because Mum and Dad were Christians. And Dad, being 39, 40 in age, he wasn't called up because all the men had been called up. And he wanted to go, but he was reserved. And he and his and Mum were fire guards and different extra jobs that they did. And fine. But they were church members and we went every Sunday. And only one time a little girl that I was sitting next to said, "I don't want to sit next to you because you're a German." And I went home and told Mum and Dad. And Dad was furious. And of course he saw his sister, who was the superintendent of the Sunday school. And he said, "Make sure that never happens again. And take that child away from Edith so she doesn't have this, you know."
He was able to stop her before it came.
People were curious when you went out into the park for a walk I sometimes, with Dad's sisters, went for a walk. In fact, had lunch with them after Sunday school. And they would say, oh, is that the little German girl? You could hear them whispering it, you know. Mm-hmm. But nobody was unkind, ever. Not ever.
Oh, that was good. Did you meet other people once you were with your new mum and dad? Did you meet other people who'd come on the kinder transport?
No, and it was ironic that years later, friends had been living in Dysart, another part of Kirkcaldy, where they had taken in a boy of the same age as me, and they never even got us together. And his parents came back. They managed to escape and get out, and they went to America. And he came back to this country to see that the people that had taken him in, whom we knew, and we met here. And it was just an amazing, amazing time together that we had. We'd never met before, but we just hugged us, you know. It was just, yeah.
But did anybody, as far as you know, come from the refugee committee to check that you were being well looked after?
Probably, you know, maybe for Mum and Dad, but I was not conscious of that, no. No. Going to the police station when I was 16, 17 and 18, the superintendent of the police was a friend of Dad's, and he said, Gavin comes, asks to see me each time and we'll have a cup of tea. It's just a formality.
And why did you have to go to the police station?
Because I was an alien.
I see. And then were you given British citizenship after that? Or
yeah, it was the Miners Act that came out when I was 19, and Dad saw about that, getting me converted to Christianity, to British nationality.
So I'm assuming that you not only didn't meet any other people who came from Germany, but you also didn't meet anybody from the Jewish community, is that correct?
Not quite, because there was a teacher at Kirkcaldy High called Herr Gude, and he took in a Polish Jewish lad, and we became very friendly. In fact, they helped Mum and Dad because they couldn't speak German, and he did the translating. So I was very fond of Dr. Gooder and Henry. So, yeah.
What did you find strangest about Scotland?
Tomato soup. I had red soup. I'd never, ever had red soup in my life before. Red soup. But I thought it was all just so interesting. You know, nobody was anything but helpful. It was just, Scotland's a country for me, but British. I'm first and foremost British.
Yes. And did you see your father again? What happened?
Yes.
Your birth father?
That was very difficult. Very difficult, because I went to Germany, and his sister was a dear aunt of mine, and she'd been bombed and she was paralysed from the neck down, and I was going to stay with her and my father, and he arrived at the station with beautiful red roses and everything. I have to confess, with shame to this day, I felt nothing when I saw him. He was standing with his back to me as I looked out the window, and he was tall and thin, just as I remembered him. Tall, very tall, 6 feet tall, and, you know, the crinkly hair, which was grey, of course, but when he turned, his face was so wrinkled and ravaged, but he was always touching me and holding my hand, and I could not feel the love that I had felt for this wonderful father that I had for nearly 7 years. Well, 7 years, yes.
And when was it that you went? How old were you by then when you went back to Germany to see him?
Would it be 19 or 20? I was a student, yeah.
It was a long time.
And of course, what I didn't know was that my Scottish father was going out of his mind, because he said to Mum, she'll not want to come back. She'll see her own father, she won't want to come back. And she kept saying, she was one of these wonderful calming spirits. She said, Gavin, she'll be back. Don't you worry. This is her home and she loves us. And I never saw such relief on their faces when I stepped off that plane and just ran towards them, you know.
Why was it you weren't able to go back sooner than that? Because that must have been quite a long time after the war ended.
Well, I had no desire to go. I'd been fighting it. Mm-hmm. And Mum and Dad didn't want to force it.
Right. Well, that's interesting. And after school, what happened?
After school, I sort of said I applied for university and was accepted for St Andrews University. And then I suddenly said, you know, you've been looking after me all these years. I would like to go and work. And Mum and Dad said, no, take your education first. But when I make up my mind about something, I can be quite firm. So what happened was I applied for the Continental Exchange in London and got into the post office and the civil service here as a telephonist. And it was the strangest thing, but just when I realised that I had made a terrible mistake, because all the girls were just talking about their boyfriends and what they did, and I thought I could do a university, open university. So I spent evenings, weekends studying, and they would say, what were you doing at the weekend, Edith? And, you know, even boyfriends, I couldn't spend the time with them because I was studying. I didn't want to tell them I was doing this quietly. And I thought, this is not going to work. So I decided I would leave the post office. And ironically, when I had just made up my mind to do so, the appointment came through from London that I'd got a post in the Continental Exchange if I'd wanted it. But I didn't, so then I went to university.
And what did you study there?
Modern languages and Latin. I did Italian the first year as well. But my degree is in French and German.
And then I think you went on to teach.
Yeah, went for a year to Murray House and then on to teach. 31 and a half years teaching, and I was a couple of years in the post office, and that counted towards my final pension, so it worked out well.
And have you ever wanted to go back to Germany since that last meeting with your father?
No. I did go with a couple of groups when we took students, and I had a very good head of department. He was Polish and happened to be in Poland at the time the war broke out, and therefore, yeah, he had to join the Polish army. And he and I took a couple of trips to Germany with pupils, and that was most enjoyable.
And later in life, did you start mixing more with other people who came either as kinder transport or as survivors of the Holocaust?
Well, yes, I heard about the kinder transport. I think it was really through Hansi, although she didn't come with a kinder transport, but I just had this desire to meet some of the others. And I used to enjoy meeting Bob and Betty and the Wungers, whom I hadn't known before, and some of the others, and all had done very well, you know. So, but Rosa Zacharin was a dear lady, yeah, and I found her very nice. She's been through to see me, but it's keeping in touch, you know, and there it is.
If you look back now on your years here in Scotland, what would you say has been the high point for you?
Oh my, there's so many.
Oh, high points?
Yeah, well, getting wonderful foster parents, even although I was never adopted, they were wonderful parents to me. They had lost their own child, and Mum nearly died, and the baby was stillborn, and she couldn't have any more. But they took me, thinking that I would go back to my own parents. What kind of people are those? Wonderful, loving people. That was a highlight, and giving me an education, because they did without, they didn't get grants in those days, and they saw me right through my education and everything, and it was wonderful. And I said, well, one thing I'm not going to do, and that's I'm not going to teach. Well, just wait and see. So my lady advisor said to me, Edith, I want you to take a year at Murray House, if, you know, once you're through, you go and get your degree. And I said, I don't want to teach. But she said, nevertheless, take your year at Murray House. And I always remember, because Miss Christie was a very strict lady, but she was an excellent, excellent lady and teacher. We had her for classics, for Latin. And that's what I did. I found myself in teaching, and I loved it, absolutely loved it. I had 31 and a half years teaching, and I loved it.
And did you ever tell the children about your background and where you
came
from?
No, but since I've retired, I've done many talks in schools, usually to either Primary 7 or lot to Primary 7, and also to secondary schools. Yeah, I did that for many years, and but now I'm past that, I think, yeah.
And you felt it was important, why, to do that?
Because I had had to hide my Jewishness, I had to hide my being German, and through Mum and Dad they said, but there's nothing to be ashamed of, why would you hide that? And I suddenly felt, I can shout it from the rooftops, I am Jewish. And if I were in a room that was full of people and somebody said, any Jews stand, I would not even hesitate, because I am so proud of my Jewish birth and that I had a Jewish mother that bore me.
And yet you're a keen member of the church as well,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, yes. I was a deacon for many, many years, but it's only for so many years at a time in the Baptist church. I was baptised, and Hansie came. She said, Edith, I don't know if I'm going to manage, because I'm in Coldstream in the morning for the service, but if I can, I'll be there in the evening.
And that was Hansie Douglas.
Douglas Dobbshina, yeah. And I can always remember her when I was baptised. And Helen, who's my best friend, Dr. Wisher, she came, got me out and dried me off and went and got dressed. And then I came through and Hansie shot down the aisle like that, you know.
She was lovely. Gave you a hug?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Are there, I shouldn't ask this really, but are there any low points from your experience here in Scotland?
Difficult to tell. Because in many ways, I've been so blessed. So many ways. My home. No mortgage. I could take early retirement because of my deafness. That has been a hard thing to put up with. Because it started when I was in my late 30s. And it's got steadily worse. So I have very strong hearing aids. And yeah. And I think I always vowed, which was wrong, I know that now, that I would never marry unless it was a Jew that I married. And as it so happened, one of the loves of my life was German, turned out to be German, and I couldn't tell him. I hadn't even the courage to tell him that I was Jewish, but I just broke it off and said, no, I don't think this friendship is going to go anywhere. So, yeah. But no, I've been so blessed. And pension from my teaching, you know, and everything in the house was left for me, so I'm blessed. I would have loved to have had children, especially grandchildren. Oh, how I would have loved them. But I have 7 godchildren, and they are very loving, and I've had them since they were born, and now they're all grown up. That's some of them up there. These are godchildren.
You've got lovely photographs.
My identical twins, uh-huh.
Well, Edith, that was very nice to speak to you this afternoon. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.